Hello, everyone, and welcome to Police Off the Cuff, Real Crime Stories. I'm your host, retired NYPD Sergeant Bill Cannon, a 27-year veteran of the NYPD. You know, folks, a lot of people have been covering this case today and the press conference by Oklahoma State Bureau of Investigation today went off at around 11-ish. And even though they kept their posture of keeping things rather close to the vest, we did learn some new things from listening to that press conference. I'm going to play part of it. I'm not going to play the whole thing. But the breaking news really was last night when they discovered the remains of two bodies. And they are not identifying them yet. I'm sure they've been identified by the Oklahoma Office of the Chief Medical Examiner by this point, but they haven't released that information yet. But when you put two and two together and you realize they were searching in the area that the evidence led them to in the search for Jillian Kelly and Veronica Butler, the two Kansas moms who became entangled in this horrific crime. So we must believe that they did recover the bodies of Jillian Kelly and Veronica Butler. But they're not going to release that information till they're forensically identified by DNA, by dental records, and other means. And then they will release that information to us. In the press conference, and we'll get into it a little bit more, they did release a couple of really good investigative nuggets in regards to this case. And what was that? Well, we're gonna tell you later on as we play part of this press conference. So folks, hold on to your seats. Get ready to enter true crime from a police perspective. You're entering the off-the-cuff zone, the police off-the-cuff zone.
There has to be some common sense.
Yes, sir. They have the car stopped at 10th and Grant's bike rider.
We still don't know who pulled the trigger.
Before I introduce our esteemed guest, who has been somewhat of a frequent flyer, this is not JetBlue, this is Police Off the Cuff, but I'm going to introduce her in a second. I just want to say what an outstanding job and a professional job, the professionalism to the, its highest level that the Oklahoma State Bureau of Investigation, the FBI, the Highway Patrol, the Kansas Highway Patrol, the Oklahoma Highway Patrol, all these law enforcement entities get together and they use that word partnership and they do an unbelievable job. This was a needle in a haystack, yet they put this case together in just almost exactly 2 weeks. And they had the correct direction. An investigative direction is one of the most important things for a homicide investigator, because sometimes you can go the wrong way. And what do you have to do when you find that out? You have to start all over. But they picked the correct investigative direction right from the beginning. They kept their mouth shut, which I love because I know it drives the press crazy. But you know something? We're not here to feed the press information. What law enforcement is here to do is to solve this case and bring justice to the victims and the victims' families. So that's much more important than a soundbite on a TV show, even though the press, look, we use expression on Police Off the Cuff, they can be your greatest friend or your worst enemy. And I live by that. I lived by that on the police department. I never told the press anything, you know, but there were people that did. So enough said. I'm going to bring our esteemed guest on frequent flyer. She's a professor. I'm going to say Albertus Magnus, but that's Mike Geary's at St. Thomas University in Northern Miami. Welcome to the show, Dr. Debbie Goodman. Welcome to the show, Dr. Debbie.
Hello, hello, Sergeant Bill and the wonderful viewers. Thank you so much for having me on. And just what a deplorable, devastating case this is. And I couldn't agree with you more in the outstanding work of all of our law enforcement agencies and just the men and women who are so devoted and dedicated to making sure that they bring a case to closure of this magnitude. So kudos to them and the wonderful work that they've exhibited.
You know, Dr. Debbie, I think you being a criminologist can really appreciate the professionalism, because I think in this country, we take our law enforcement for granted. We just expect them to solve things. And when they don't, we get all like crazy. Like, remember the Koberger case in Idaho, the four students that were murdered. When there wasn't an arrest in 6 weeks, the press was saying, oh, is this a cold case? I mean, that to me is just arrogance and really an air of being just spoiled by the great results that law enforcement gets across this country.
Absolutely. I don't know how or why, but there is that expectation that we're on this instantaneous need to know. But certainly law enforcement officials know that too much information too soon can absolutely derail the case. So you're right. You and I spoke at length about the Koberger case and, you know, people thinking it's never going to be solved. No, but we knew it's very meticulous. It's going to take time. And this one as well, for this to have been solved A to Z in 2 weeks, I hope people realize and recognize just what a great accomplishment that is. Because as you said at the onset, Sergeant Bill, it was like a needle in the haystack. You know, who did what and in which direction do we turn? Would it have been a complete random issue whereby the women's car may have broken down and were they victims of robbery or some type of sexual assault or kidnapping? But it was really that issue of the family discord and disharmony that led them down the different path, and rightfully so. So again, just amazing work.
Dr. Debbie, you said that so eloquently. Thank you. This is what it looked like early on. And when we, 2 weeks, four arrests in connection with missing Kansas moms, and those are the four perpetrators. And here they are with their names on. Tiffany Michelle Adams, who's the grandmother of the children involved in this custody battle. Tad Burt Cullum, her boyfriend. Cole Earl Twombly and Cora Twombly, apparently friends. They were identified as friends on Facebook. Oh, yes, we're friends on Facebook. Oh, how'd you like to come along and do a murder first degree with us? You know, so many people have also commented, like, what's wrong with these people? How is Tiffany, 54 years old? She looks like she's about 90. Tad Burt Cullum, 43? Are you kidding me? What it screams to me is potential drug usage. You know, drugs will age you to that point. So when we look at these perpetrators, that's what I'm thinking right away. So the Oklahoma State Bureau of Investigation provided an update on the case of the two missing Kansas women on today during the news conference. Authorities provided a few new updates. Authorities confirmed two bodies were recovered in rural Texas County on Sunday. The bodies were transported to the medical examiner's office to determine their identification as well as the manner of death. Although the bodies have not been identified, the OSBI talked about the four arrests involving 27-year-old Veronica Butler and 39-year-old Jillian Kelly, who went missing on Saturday, March 30th, after never making it to a pickup location to get their children. During the news conference, KSN learned that the children was safe. And on Saturday, Tad Cullum, Tiffany Adams, Cole Twombly, and Cora Twombly were booked on suspicion of two counts of first-degree murder, two counts of kidnapping, and one count of conspiracy to commit first-degree murder. And these, the people that you see on the screen right now, are the ones arrested for this. And, you know, Dr. Debbie, I want to say something because, and you'll get this too, we always teach our audience that there's a manner and a cause of death, all right? And manner of death, there's five ways, right? Homicide, suicide, accidental, natural, and undetermined, right? Now, the cause is gunshot wound, stab wound, asphyxia, something like that, the cause that actually caused the death. But one of the things that people don't realize is that they've already told us the manner of death, haven't they, Dr. Debbie? And I'm going to give you this tough PhD question. How did they tell us?
They certainly did tell us, but you've said so many great things that I also wanted to comment on, Sergeant Bill, before I get to this issue. But the whole look of these four, it's almost like the fearful four. They're just grisly and gruesome looking. And I know we're not supposed to judge the book by the cover, but human nature is that in 10 seconds or less, we're certainly in our field, we kind of assess with whom are we speaking and such. So not only is their physical look indicative of drug use and possibly more, but their mental health must have been compromised. But here's my concern, you know, when this goes to trial, what will a defense attorney say about them? That certainly they were on drugs and therefore what? They weren't as culpable as we should hold them to. But I would disagree with that vehemently because all of this did not just happen instantaneously. And we know that there must have been extensive and expansive planning here. And first degree murder includes that, as we know, the planning, the premeditation, it being willful and it being malicious. But also, Sergeant Bill, another great point you raise, and it's really on forensic psychology here, this next issue, is all about the family. We call this familicide, as you well know. And just to remind the viewers, when a family member commits a murder against another family member, it's really just something very astonishing, which again is the great work of law enforcement to know and to recognize that because of that discord and disharmony and the child custody, and thank goodness the children are okay. That's really, you know, again, another key issue here that no harm was done to the children. But the fact that we would have a member of a family orchestrating the death of another member really feels so extreme, and therefore we will want to ensure through our great justice system that justice is rendered appropriately, because to think now that these families, the Butler family, the Kelly family, for these children to grow up without their mother, that's such a significant loss to these young children. And then of course, Pastor Kelly, who has lost his wife in this despair and devastation. And yes, you're correct. We know that they've been shot.
Well, you know, Dr. Debbie, even in the press conference, it's sort of come out through different ways that potentially, and it's still really at the rumor phase because we don't have any confirmation from law enforcement, but we're hearing through some sources, and I think News Nation has a source, and they wouldn't, of course, name the source who said that they were shot. So they were going with that. There's a news organization that went with that. But the big, to me, part of the big story here too is like, and you touched upon it also, is how is life so cheap that you can get four people together and plot, conspire, and murder two young women in the prime of their life because one of the people involved is having a custody dispute over the children. So a way to solve that problem is to eliminate the mother, just kill her. You know, is that, I mean, how is that an option in anyone's mental capacity, their thought process? How is that an option? You know, and we have, you know, we talk about the Adelson case. I mean, obviously we look at these people, they look like they've got problems in life. But then we have the Adelsons, the dental family from Miami,
sure,
that conspired to kill their son-in-law. And now, one by one, the family's going down. The son, who was a periodontist, he's doing life in prison. And the next one to be charged is the grandmother. And she's going to be charged with the same charges. And this prosecutor is not finished. She's going to go after the entire family. And why did those people, educated, smart, rich people, why did they decide that murder was an option, Dr. Debbie?
It's a great question, Sergeant Bill. And I think there's a sense of entitlement among that Adelson family, thinking very similarly with child custodial issues, and we don't like this person anymore, and there's a divorce, and let's simply eliminate him. It's absolutely astonishing and amazing to me as a criminologist that not only do people have the thought, but then they carry it out, right? We call that something in criminology, as you well know, and it's really criminology 101. It's called mens rea and actus reus. The mens rea component is that criminal thought, right? Even the little kid who's thinking, gee, maybe I can just steal that candy bar and nobody will see. Well, he has to have the thought first before he carries it out. Then if he decides to steal it, that's our actus reus. He went through with the action. But here we are at such a heightened magnitude of criminality, when people not only think about killing somebody, their own members of their family, and then they carry it out. And unfortunately, Sergeant Bill, we also know and we have seen an uptick in these types of crimes in the last 3 calendar years from our CDC, our Center for Disease Control, our WHO, World Health Organization. And maybe it had something to do with the COVID pandemic and confinement, where people are, you know, literally with isolation. But we did see and have seen this uptick in the last 3 calendar years of family members killing family members. Murder, suicides have been on the uptick. But it really astonishes and amazes me, even though I'm deeply in our field, but the psychology that it would take and the thought process and the actions and the planning of how these people did what they did to Miss Butler and Miss Kelly, really, I'm in favor of stiff penalty to the heightened level of what the law will permit.
You know, Dr. Debbie, I almost felt like I was back teaching college when mens rea, actus rea, and I'm like, oh, can I remember what those are? And I remember I used to always teach the kids one of the 4 culpable mental states of mind. And I'm just saying this for you guys out there, maybe never studied criminal justice. And I used to use the acronym RIC, recklessly, intentionally, criminally, negligently, and knowingly. And I was like, see, just remember who RIC is. And you remember that, you know. I was always a big acronym guy because it enabled me to remember some of the things that were a little more difficult to remember. I'm going to play some of the press conference. And obviously, this went on at about 11. A lot of YouTubers, a lot of content creators went live with it. I like sometimes to digest it and see what it possibly means. And when I first saw the PR guy for the Oklahoma State Bureau of Investigation, I was like, oh, no, not another PR guy. But today, I sort of felt a little bit ingratiated to him because he skillfully did his job and gave up very little in the press conference, yet he gave up a little bit, you know. And again, their duty is to the victims and to the families, not to KUTV, all right? So that's one of the things we have to remember. So I'm going to put him on the screen. We're going to play some of it, and I'm not going to play in the beginning of the press conference. It's all the more political people that just want to thank everybody. That's fine. We don't need to watch that. We already thanked the police. We thanked the FBI. We thanked the Oklahoma State Bureau of Investigation. We thanked the Kansas Highway Patrol. We thanked the Oklahoma Highway Patrol, the local police agencies. I don't have their name right now, but we thank all the law enforcement partners that worked on this case. They did a fantastic job. So let me play this here. And again, this was played earlier on.
Not at this time. We identified that there were 2 bodies during our search. Both of those deceased persons have been transported to the Oklahoma Medical Examiner's Office, where they will do a proper identification and also look into a cause and manner of death.
What led to the discovery of the body?
Based on the evidence that our agents and local law enforcement were able to obtain, we used that to search a wide area throughout Texas County, and we were able to use those resources in order to find where these two bodies were.
Do you know the timeline for when the bodies should be identified?
It's a case-by-case basis, but as soon as we hear back from the Oklahoma Medical Examiner's Office, we will let the public know. No, I mean, I can say that it was a very rural area. I cannot state the condition of the bodies.
Is this private property?
I cannot confirm that at this time.
In Oklahoma, there's the death penalty if convicted. Could we possibly maybe see this in the state?
You would have to reach out to the district attorney's office. That'll be something that will be discussed further down the line.
D.A. Stewart alluded to a lot of people calling in with a lot of tips where they're seeking the tips.
We received several tips throughout this entire process. The public, I mean, I know that we had thanked that our local law enforcement agencies, what they were able to help us and throughout this search, but the people here throughout this area have done a tremendous job of reaching out to us. The original press release that we had put out on March 31st in regards to searching for these two women, we constantly received several tips and had used those throughout the entire 14-day process in order to find these two bodies, and then also discover and find those who were responsible for this crime.
So the reason foul play was suspected was because of evidence found in the car. Can you go into more detail now of what that evidence was?
We cannot still at this time. It is still an ongoing investigation, and that is for our investigative purposes. Again, we can say that the evidence that was discovered inside of that abandoned vehicle and around it, were able to help our investigators determine that there was foul play involved, and then led to the progression of this investigation. What was in the vehicle around it, we cannot discuss.
Dr. Debbie, we had spoke, actually, I went live myself last night, and I spoke about how potentially, and I don't know what the forensic evidence was in the vehicle, other than there was blood. And right. Could there have been blood spatter? And a blood spatter expert can read what weapon caused the spatter by the size of the particles of blood and the way the blood appears on a surface. And a firearm, because of the speed of the round that hits the body, it causes very small little prickly pieces of blood spatter on an object. So, and I'm just using forensic science. Possibly that could have been one of the ways they determined it was a firearm. There could also be ballistics on the scene and in the car. So all of those are possibilities that they determined right away. All right, there was foul play. Apparently, there was a small amount of blood in the vehicle, but there was a large amount of blood outside the vehicle. The other thing is that the persons that did this would have had to go into the car and drag them out of there. So they potentially could have left their own DNA off and or fingerprints inside that vehicle. So all of these are forensic possibilities. Someone in the chat, Witto, put a very interesting comment. News Nation reported that the 16-year-old daughter of the Twombleys was told to clean out the pickup after the incident. She wasn't aware of what happened, but gave the information to the police. You know, Dr. Mary Ellen O'Toole, who was a retired FBI agent, and I'll play a little cut from her before that she went on one of the stations and said, and the way she put it, I sort of appreciate it. There was definitely some human source info. I like that little term, meaning someone told them something that led them where. The other thing is, and we spoke about it the other night, myself and Mike Geary, who is the weak link out of this crew? Who is the weakest person? Who's going to say, oh, my God, I'm facing the death penalty? I've never been arrested before. Could it be Cora Twombly? Could it be Tiffany Michelle Adams, who potentially could be the shooter in this. Someone sang like a parakeet, to use my New Yorkism, right? Someone gave human source information, as Dr. Mary Ellen O'Toole, former FBI agent, says. So that puts the police on the correct compass course. Dr. Debbie.
Right. Two great points, Sergeant Bill. First, let's talk forensically. And here again is where we're with such commendation and accolades to our experts who really know how to interpret and analyze and dissect all of this. So you're right on point with whatever type and composition of blood was found in the car, they can make that decision and determination as to from what type of weapon did it resonate. And most likely a gun. We'll say it that way only because nothing has been 100% confirmed. And then the next great point you offer is not just the interior of the car, which we know is very important for a variety of other things, right? Had there been some type of struggle, and we can only imagine that there would have been, but the prints, of course, and hair fiber, and any type of tissue and skin residual, all of that too can be assessed and determined by the experts. So we're, you know, if we're speaking on the internal and interior of the car. Now, if we go to the exterior, we would logically assume that if the death occurred in the car or some type of very brutal attack, then if the individuals are taking the women out of the car, then of course we're going to have, again, the blood within the framework of the exterior. So that's very important as well. And it's just, again, a tremendous effort here to really piece all of this together and connect the dots. And that's exactly what's happened. So,
Dr. Debbie, I'm making you a star by giving you the screen to yourself. I hope you know that.
You're the best.
We have to have some humor when we cover these heavy situations.
So right, right. You
know, I'm giving you some shorts for your academic career. James C.
Yes, go ahead. I was only going to mention that human factor too. That's very important.
Somebody, well, let me just shout out to Jane C. and then I'll go right back to you. Jane C., thank you so much for $4.99 super sticker. Very much appreciated. You know, guys, we try to explain this in a scientific way and in a way, an experienced way. I did this for 27 years and I was in the detective bureau. NYPD, greatest detectives in the world. They say they are. I think they are. And I was in the detective bureau for 16 years, my last 10 in Manhattan North Homicide, the most prestigious homicide unit in the nation. So I'll get away with that. Dr. Debbie, go back to your thought.
No, but before I do, a shout out to you and always the thanks and appreciation for all of your years of tremendous service. And you're still serving the community, Sergeant Bill, through training and education and bringing such amazing programming. So that's certainly very much appreciated. And to NYPD, of course, we love all of our officers. No, I was merely commenting on your other point, which was excellent as well, about that human factor. You know, somehow these people are like, they think they're the Incredible Hulks, right? When they're committing the crime and they're planning the crime and they'll be the untouchables. But I do appreciate when, again, back to excellent law enforcement through the interviews, the interrogations, the questioning, the pressure to tell the truth, ultimately somebody will break. And we need that to happen, even in this framework of four horrendous people, for somebody to have spoken, that's critical.
Absolutely, 100%. The love of God. Mods, can you tell Sergeant Bill check affidavits, NewsAsian report, even showed computer search. But, you know, the love of God. I mentioned all of these things, and I'll mention it again. One of the biggest things in any homicide investigation these days is digital evidence. Digital evidence meaning the cell phones, the computers, the car computers, the text messages going between the perpetrators in communicating with each other. All of that stuff is tremendously important. That's why detectives have to be versed in that type of information. And we know right now, look at the charges, all right? Each person is being charged with murder in the first degree. So one of the things we know about that is that for there to be a murder in the first degree, there's an underlying felony. And the underlying felony here is almost as depraved as the murder itself, and that's kidnapping. So they abducted someone against their will and took them to a location they didn't want to go to. So that's the underlying felony. And then to put the icing on the cake, we have conspiracy to commit murder, which means all these four individuals conspired with each other. They talked about it. They planned it to commit these heinous murders, all over a custody battle. I mean, is there anyone out there that if their neighbor came to them and said, hey, I need you to help me kill two people. I mean, is there anyone that's going to say, oh, yeah, I'm available Friday? You know, come on. This is just horrific, and it's almost not believable. And someone just said, oh, I hear that Tiffany Michelle Adams is a meth addict. You think? You think she's got some kind of drug problem? I mean, 54 looks like 84 in that picture, you know? And most of us, as we get older, we try to look better, not worse, right? We try to exercise, eat right, get sleep, do all of those things that don't cause you to look 84 when you're 54. I mean, that's really not that important. But what is important is that this investigation took the correct path from the beginning. And I always say it's so simple. Your interview and interrogation is one of the most important parts of investigation. And when you ask a question, what happens? You get an answer. And when you get an answer, what does that lead to? More questions. You start asking more questions. And then the crystal ball starts becoming clearer. And you start get a picture of what may have happened. And then you have to do something we call vet information. Not all information told to you by everyone is truthful. People lie. I don't want to shock the audience, but people do lie, you know? So you have to vet the information, and you have to separate the wheat from the chaff, right? And know what is good information and what's absolute bullshit, you know? And that's what great interrogators do. That's what great interviewers do. And that's how an investigation like this, they did an unbelievable job that 2 weeks later, four people are under arrest and they recovered the bodies. So human source information, you bet, because forensics will tell us a story. But you know what juries love to hear? They love to hear people confess. They love to hear that because they're like, oh, what if the forensic evidence is wrong? Well, usually the forensic evidence doesn't lie. You know who lies? People. People lie, right? But when you can get someone involved in a crime to admit to it or testify against the people and their testimony matches the evidence, very powerful. Let me go back to the press conference a bit.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
When you are regarding arrests and multiple arrests in the magnitude that we have all discussed, there is always, there is always a cause of, you know, of trying to protect the public as best you possibly can. You know, we can say that all four of those arrests were made without incident. And so that of course, went extremely well, and we are extremely grateful. Another agency that wasn't able to make it that was a big part of that and helped us tremendously was the Oklahoma Highway Patrol. So we want to thank them tremendously on that. But, I mean, again, there was concern, but we are extremely thankful that no one was hurt, no one was injured during this process.
Did any of the four suspects charged in the case tell law enforcement where to find them?
Say that one more time.
Did any of the four suspects charged in the case tell law enforcement where to find them?
No, we cannot discuss that at this time.
How early did you guys have suspects?
We can't discuss that at this time.
Are you able to go into further detail how you believe that it was targeted or not?
Based on the evidence and the information that we were able to obtain throughout the entire investigation, what was found inside of the vehicle, witnesses, family, friends of the victims that we were able to talk to throughout this entire process, we were able to gain the information to determine that that these four people were responsible for both of these women going missing.
Also, are you able to confirm this is for a custody matter?
We cannot confirm that at this time. Again, because it is still an ongoing investigation, we cannot discuss that.
We know that one arrest was in Texas County, the three others in Cimarron. Can you describe the arrest process? You said there was no resistance, but...
That's all we can really say at this time. And we can say that the four people that we were looking for were found, arrested, and placed into custody within the same day, and there was no resistance.
And obviously, you can't talk about evidence in this case, but is there significant physical evidence in this investigation?
Yes.
Can you elaborate?
No.
Are you able to go into the
audience? I love this guy. I just love how he shuts the press down when they're trying to get very inquisitive about things that potentially could hurt the investigation. And he just simply says, no, I can't talk to you about that. And I think that's a great thing because, look, people think that because there's an arrest now, all right, the case is closed. No, these detectives and these law enforcement people are working just as hard now as they were before they arrested these four and before they recovered the remains of what we believe to be Jillian and Veronica. So there's still tons of work to do, Dr. Debbie.
There is, Sergeant Bill. Again, you know, the kudos and the accolades of all that it took and the men and women involved in tireless efforts of sacrificing time and interaction with their own families to make sure that they could get to the people and get to the bottom line here of who did this horrendous action. And 2 weeks is really a very quick turnaround for what has happened here with two decedents, and to know that four people were involved and they've made the arrests. And you're right, they're continuing, of course, with making sure the interviews, the interrogations, that everything, you know, the I's are dotted, the T's are crossed, no room for error, and just honing in on who really did what and how was this all laid out. There's still that entirety of who orchestrated this and who is behind all of this. We are, you know, pretty certain it's Tiffany, but then what? Then what role did each of these three play? And can we still get this motley crew here to be honest? What you're saying is so powerful and on point, Sergeant Bill, about the lying. I would have to think that of these four, there's going to be the backpedaling and backtracking and, oh, but if I didn't participate, they threatened to kill me. You know, all the lies that potentially take place here of pointing fingers rather than looking inward and asking oneself, how could you even go along with this? You know, we look at the beautiful images here of Miss Butler and Miss Kelly, and I can only again relate in the sense of being a mom. And you know, moms will move mountains for their children, and I'm thinking about this drive. They made the drive to get to the children, and yet terribly so, devastatingly so. They didn't make it, but to have been intercepted here by these four and what was to come next can just only create the pathway of despair and devastation for the children left behind.
Absolutely. Sana Elise Holt Johnson, a member of the YouTube membership. Thank you so much. Good evening, Sergeant Bill Cannon, Dr. Debbie Goodman. Well, thank you so much. It's good to see you, Sana. You know, one of the concepts I just want to throw out there for folks that aren't in the criminal justice field, there's a concept called acting in concert. And what does that mean? What does that actually mean, acting in concert? Well, you have to do something in this case that helps to facilitate, that's a good word, I'm glad I remembered that word, to facilitate the felony, which is the main felony here, is murder in the first degree. So what if right here, Cora Twombly, who you see in this picture, right? What if her only job was driving the car? What if her only job was getting rid of property of the decedents? She didn't pull the trigger. Why should she be charged with murder? Same thing. What if her husband's job was just, say, dumping the bodies? He and his wife will be charged just as if they pulled the trigger. And that's acting in concert. So all four of these people, that's why we see the charges. Murder in the first degree, 2 counts each for each one of them. Kidnapping, 2 counts each for each one of them. And conspiracy to commit murder. Could these charges be amended at some point and say, oh, we don't have enough to charge Cora with that? Well, there's a possibility, but I think they're coming out of the gate charging the right charges right now. And one of the ways they may charge a lesser charge is if Cora cooperated. If Cora sang like a parakeet and gave them information. We don't know. We don't know if any of them. As Dr. Mary Ellen O'Toole said, they must have had some human sources. I agree. They must have had someone singing, someone telling them where to look for the bodies. Because or else, Dr. Debbie, it was a needle in a haystack to find these bodies.
Absolutely, Sergeant Bill, and that's a great point also to raise the whole concept of acting in concert. See, what they didn't do is they didn't act in coercion. Nobody here was forced. It doesn't appear to be. So they acted willfully. Back to your RIC acronym, Sergeant Bill, they all had knowledge. They knew what was happening. It's not like, let's get in the car and take a drive to the corner convenience store and get some popcorn and soda here. So everybody knew what the plan was going to be. So that knowledge, and also, you know, we could throw in a couple of legal themes here of duty to intervene, even among the four, even as all of this in whatever manner it was being discussed, somebody could have stood up to say, are you out of your mind? Are you crazy? Of course we're not doing this. Did anybody do that? No. So in the car, they all went for this trip to kill. And they, even before it all happened, somebody still could have stood up to the others with bravery and boldness and say, no, we cannot proceed with this. Nobody did that. So there has to be penalty and punishment for these two beautiful lives lost with intent. They intended to do it, Sergeant Bill, and they did it. They could have changed their minds. They did not. But I understand what you're saying, and I do agree in part. I don't know yet in full because I don't know the extent of each one's actions. Once we know that, then I may have a better or different answer. But right now, I'm in agreement about potentially if any of these four, or even if more than one of the four were to again participate in turning state's evidence and share with what actually happened, could they potentially get the lesser sentence and punishment? I would say yes. But again, absolutely, if everybody a participant, then I'm on the fence.
Lisa Botkin from the chat, wish the officials had been asked, was there ever a chance of Veronica and Jillian being rescued alive? Lisa, that's a great question. I don't think they would have answered it, though, because that would have given up some part of their investigation. I want to play this. This was News Nation last night as the information came forth that they had just recovered the remains of two bodies. They didn't, again, identify who it might be.
Get to right now, just coming into our newsroom, a sad ending. The bodies believed to be the two Kansas moms found by police in Oklahoma. This information just coming in right now, 27-year-old Veronica Butler and 39-year-old Jillian Kelly, last seen March 30th. Tiffany Adams, a grandmother of one of the kids, one of the people now arrested after Butler and Kelly disappeared. Let's get straight to News Nation's Nancy Liu, live on the ground for us tonight. Nancy, tell us what you're learning now.
Well, Natasha, it's yet more deflating news for these communities in the Oklahoma panhandle. The Oklahoma State Bureau of Investigations had told me that they were searching vast areas of rural Texas County for the two women. And just minutes ago, we heard from OSBI that along with the FBI and the Texas County Sheriff's Department, in a joint operation, they have recovered two deceased persons in rural Texas County, and both individuals are being transported to the Oklahoma Office of the Chief Medical Examiner to determine identification and cause of manner of death. So that means there is no positive identification that these bodies are Jillian Kelly and Veronica Butler, but of course, this discovery happened during their massive search for the two women. We are expecting a news conference tomorrow from the OSBI, and of course, News Nation will bring that to you live. They have provided very little information about their investigation all along. They have kept things very close to the vest, but this is exclusive video from just yesterday. News Nation on the ground capturing this exclusive footage as they closed in on the four suspects who they arrested yesterday, including Tiffany Adams, who is the grandmother to Butler's kids. And it's suspected that a custody dispute may be linked to all of this, what has turned out to be a case of double murder. But again, the breaking news tonight is that two bodies have been recovered. There's no positive identification of these two bodies. They are now on the way to the medical examiner's office, but these bodies were recovered during the search for these two women, Veronica Butler and Jillian Kelly. So yet more deflating news to an already tragic story, Natasha.
Yes, certainly. And I know you've been pointing out all night, Nancy, there are six children in all of this left without their mothers, but we appreciate you bringing that breaking update straight to us. Nancy Liu, live in Texas County, Oklahoma.
So that was last night when they first recovered these bodies. And I also want, you know, I want to give a shout out to News Nation, because sometimes we beat up the media, and they did a fantastic job on this. And they were boots on the ground. They were feeding us this information in a very unfriendly place. You know, when you look at that location, I don't think you'd want to be out there by yourself. You know, it's a scary, they call it rural. It's a scary little location with a lot of meth heads, it seems like, you know, based on what we're seeing here. And this is where they chose to commit this horrific crime. And just absolutely outrageous. I want to go to a quick commercial. Folks, if you like true crime from a police perspective, then you're in the right location. And if you're not subscribed to us, go on our YouTube, hit that subscribe button, give us a thumbs up, hit the like button, share us with your friends or your family. And if you want to contribute to us, we have a Patreon with three different levels. We also have a YouTube channel membership with, count them, five different levels. And our fans, our friends, our subscribers, they make this show possible to keep it going every day. And we really appreciate them. Sana Elise Hoth Johnson, again, thank you for the NOK 50. Have a nice day. Sana, you too. So glad that you could join us from across, way across the pond. Thank you so much for joining us. You know, Dr. Debbie, this invest, and Dr. Debbie, I know that you're at school right now. And if at any point you have a class you have to take off, I fully understand it. I won't say, hey, where'd Dr. Debbie go? Oh, she, I won't hear the bell of the calling Dr. Debbie to her next class. And I really appreciate you coming on with virtually no notice whatsoever, which is the way I fly sometimes. I fly by the seat of my pants and I call people up. Hey, you want to come on the show? When? Oh, 15 minutes from now. Oh, my God. And Dr. Debbie's more times than not says, yes, yes, I'll do it. You know, so thank you, Dr. Debbie. I really appreciate you coming on the show. I wanted to play that piece by Mary Ellen O'Toole, because I think she's great. I think she's also now a professor and former FBI agent. But let's listen to what she says, because I think a lot of times you hear people talk about these cases and not all of them have the experience I think that she has. And I've listened to her on lots of cases, and forensically, she is quite an expert. So let me play this here.
Ellen O'Toole, retired FBI special agent and director of the Forensic Sciences Program at George Mason University. Mary Ellen, thanks for joining me this morning. Talk about a weekend. I mean, in just a couple of days, you had four arrests and the discovery of what will likely be the bodies of the two moms. We're expecting that press conference today from OSBI. As a retired FBI agent yourself, what are you expecting to come of that later today?
What I would be expecting at this point, short of any additional information in the next couple of hours, is that they will have identified the two bodies that they found. They will provide the cause of death. To me, it was really interesting that they already established the manner of death, homicide, before they even found the two bodies. So they must have a lot of forensic evidence there that allowed them to reach that conclusion. But I would expect that they will finalize that. They may amend the charges as well. Those are very serious charges to be filed preliminarily. So we'll see whether or not they will amend those charges based on what they've learned happened at that crime scene.
Yeah, and you bring me to my next question with the charges and the evidence. The suspects were all charged with a couple counts of first-degree murder, kidnapping, conspiracy to commit murder in the first degree. Just based on hearing that, what would evidence have to look like, Mary Ellen, for investigators to bring those charges against them and take them into custody?
Such a great question. It would have to be pretty significant. It would have to be information that came from probably several sources. One of them would be the forensics. That would be very important. And it sounds like they were able to determine a lot from the vehicle. So the forensic evidence is going to be very important and very critical. But secondly, they probably had human source information. And by that, I mean, when you have four people who possibly couldn't be involved in something like this, especially something where you're looking at the severest of charges, it's not unlikely that somebody talked in order to even reduce their charges, or that somebody told somebody else and it ends up on Facebook. So I think they probably had that information as well, so they could put the two together. But it looks like authorities were absolutely confident that they got it right, again, before they even identified the two bodies.
Yeah, I'm curious what these four are saying just behind the scenes here. We're waiting and standing by to see what OSBI has to share today. Mary Ellen O'Toole, I'm so sorry, but I have to leave it there. Thank you for having
me. Your thoughts, Dr. Debbie?
Yeah, right on point. Again, it was really the combination of the right elements, the forensic issues that we spoke about with blood, determining how did that blood come to be via knife, via gunshot, exterior of the car where they found blood, and also the human dynamic. We have these people, Sergeant Bill, in our field who are simply bad people. How else can we say it? To make a decision to think about killing somebody and two people here, double homicide, and then to plan it out and to carry it out is just evil. So that's what happened. But also the human dynamic, when these individuals think they're the super incredible Hulk during the planning stage, during the commission of the crime itself, and of course, they all think they're getting away with it, just like you brought up at the onset. the Adelson family, and they thought the same thing. And the beauty is we have brilliant men and women in the law enforcement profession who will ensure that that simply will not happen. So when these people talk and they realize they're potentially facing a life sentence without parole and or the death penalty, it's a wise decision to cooperate with law enforcement. So let's see what comes next.
Absolutely. You know, I always talk about the art and the science of investigation. And the art, of course, is the great detective work and the ability to talk to people, to interview, to interrogate, to put two and two together, to do what we call, I call it hypothesizing and theorizing. And detectives get together, especially in a case like this, early on, and they start discussing direction, investigative direction. And this may, to someone unfamiliar with investigation, this may seem so simple. There's a custody, but yeah, I guess you would think that that would right away smack everyone across the face and said, that's the direction you have to go in. There's a custody battle between this grandmother. And then you look at the people that will look, that potentially are involved, Tiffany Michelle Adams and Tad Burt Cullum, and let's pull up their criminal histories. Let's pull up who they are in life. And you start finding out some nasty things about them, right? Everyone leaves a record somewhere, right? Everyone leaves their imprint on this earth. And one of the ways investigators find out about people is, guess how, folks? Talk to their neighbors. Do a canvas of the neighborhood. What do you think? Oh, my God. People probably holding up their hands like they're the scariest. But like, that tells investigators something, right? When people are terrified of their neighbors, something is rotten in Denmark. I can't believe I said that, but something's rotten in Denmark, right? And that's how detectives determine this. They don't just meet the people or, you know, just specifically criminal histories tell you a lot. What do the people do? If they're fighting with people all the time, that should raise a red flag. And all of these things that we find out absolutely paint a picture of who these people are. Dr. Debbie.
Yeah, that's really very important, Sergeant Bill. And I like to also go right to the victimology, meaning who are the victims? I often feel that if we can look there first, stay there for a while, get to know who were the victims, with whom do they interact? Do they work? What are their social behaviors and activity? What's their pattern? Once we can also take a look there, then I think it mushrooms and it blossoms further, particularly to those in their lives. And then I like to compartmentalize a little bit, because in all of our lives, you know, yours, mine, our viewers, we have personal associations and we have professional. But quite frankly, both of those can play a significant role depending upon the relationships we have with the people in our personal time and interaction, the family, the friends, the neighbors. Then we move into the professional realm. With whom do we interact, for those who work and who are the colleagues? And then really with both groups, Sergeant Bill, we look at any discord and disharmony. And if there is any such thing, I think that really becomes the tipping point in a lot of these cases. I know it sounds alarming to think, but how could a friend want to kill somebody? How could a family member want to kill somebody? How could a work colleague? But we're just finding that is what is happening in our society. And there are just so many cases that involve that. So it really is just very, very logical, meticulous, and quite frankly, brilliant work of our investigators who are able to do this.
You know, Dr. Debbie, from your appearances on the Police Off the Cuff podcast, I think I'm turning you into an honorary investigator. You're not just a criminologist. I'm turning you into an honorary investigator. And of course, I mean that humorously. Simi Sharp from the chat. Yeah, I love these NYPD dudes. I get a kick out of how they talk, and they smart mofos too. I like that, MFs too. I'm from the Midwest, and my cop friends and family are different. not as funny. I don't know. Well, thank you. I take that as a compliment. You know, I absolutely will. While yet still today, when news first broke that arrested and motive likely child custody war, I recalled Sergeant Bill Cannon and police off the cuff telling us channel members that this type scenario would likely be just what we're seeing now. Thank you. I don't have a crystal ball. I just have a lot of experience investigating things like this. And sometimes you can predict what's going to happen by having seen something exactly like this before and knowing what the police, knowing what the investigators, what they're going to do, what's their next step, why are they doing this, why are they doing that, how come they're keeping their mouth shut. All of those things, I've seen it before. And to tell you the truth, I was highly critical of the NYPD because the NYPD, when I was on the job, took a posture of telling the press way too much. And not many times it compromised our cases. But that was the posture of the powers that be it in the NYPD. They were telling the press everything. And sometimes actually, you know, compromising the case. And I'm sure if people are listening now from the NYPD, the people that really know the real deal will agree with me. Others will say, oh, he's not. No, it was absolutely 100% the truth. I remember one time we had three perpetrators we're going to pick up in the morning. And I got a call from the Deputy Commissioner of Public Information. And they said, what's going on with that case? And it was on the front page of all the newspapers. I won't say the name of the case. And I said, well, we've identified all the perps and we're going to get them this morning. And the guy from the Deputy Commissioner of Public Information Office says, yeah, what's their names? And I said, I'm not telling you their names because you're going to give it to the newspaper. They'll print it and they'll all lawyer up and we could use confessions. So this little weasel who happened to be a detective hands the phone to an inspector who outranks me by, you know, three ranks and gets on the phone screaming at me. But I kept real cool. Dude, I work in homicide. I'm not intimidated by some 1PP inspector. Who are you to tell? He starts screaming at me. I said, right on the spot, I made up a story. I said, Chief so-and-so told me not to tell you. And so now he can't yell at him. He outranks him by three ranks. So we went and picked up the perps. We got them. They all confessed. And we lived happily ever after. But that's the way the press can hurt a case, by printing something and basically giving the perps a heads up that, oh, the police are looking for these three guys, you know. That was life in the NYPD. Lieutenant Peter Pranzo, hey, Heather BB, Simi Carroll. Lieutenant Pete's in the chat. Harlem Raiders, always good to see Lieutenant Pete. So that's basically going to be our show for today. And I want to thank Dr. Debbie for coming on the show. It's always a pleasure to have you on the show. And any of you guys that are professors in horrible climates, suffice it to say, Dr. Debbie's in Northern Miami. So that's where her school is. So if you want to try to get a PhD and teach in Northern Miami, she's at St. Thomas University. And it's a beautiful weather and a great place to live. As new information comes forward in this case, and of course, the next thing that's going to come forward is the positive identification of the remains, which is not going to be a surprise to anyone who it belongs to. But as we get new information in this case, we will certainly present it to you. I wanted to just show some. This was put on Facebook, supposedly from the mother of Jillian Kelly. Could she have known this? Could the police have told her this earlier on? Yeah, but we can't confirm it. So I didn't go with it as the truth. She also put this there early on in the investigation that her daughter Jillian had passed away. So this was on Facebook. But I don't go with any of that stuff as if it's true until the police confirm it and it's true. But we'll never get the confirmation on that. Dr. Debbie, I'm going to give you final thoughts, your final words.
Well, as always, Sergeant Bill and the wonderful viewers, a pleasure to join you and to engage in the conversation. I think really today's story is about thanking law enforcement, being appreciative, being grateful for the outstanding work of the men and women involved here in this two-week process to be able to bring it to closure A to Z through the forensics, through the human dynamic. They've done an extraordinary job. You know, I always feel terribly when there's a death, and I think about the ripple effect. So, of course, I would like to express my condolences to the Butler family, to the Kelly family, and to all of their extended, you know, members of their families and their friendships, because this has a tremendous impact, and it's far-reaching when we have this type of atrocity that occurs. And to our justice system, we'll certainly be looking forward to the right penalty, the right outcome for these four individuals who decided to do this. It's absolutely hideous. And, you know, what the penalty and punishments will be consistent with the law. And I'm sure they will have the right outcomes.
Absolutely.
Bill.
From the chat, Dr. Debbie, I just got to give you some kudos. Heather, we love Dr. Debbie with a little heart there.
Thank you.
Heather, whatever. Dr. Debbie, yay. I want to just read the Simi Sharp, another Dr. Debbie fan, clapping. Heather, whatever. Thank you both. Well, I thank all you guys for tuning in. While yet still today, I like Dr. Debbie's new do.
Thank you.
Heather says, thank you, Sarge. I also wanted to read something. Donna Sheridan, I'm so sorry to hear this. In 1995, we had a murder in the family. The local media wanted every detail of the case. The sheriff's office declined to tell them what they wanted to know until the trial. Donna, sorry to hear that. But look, the police did the right thing. And just like they are now, keeping their lips sealed and not telling information to the press that could potentially hurt the case. Folks, I want to thank everyone for tuning in today. I know there was a lot of coverage on this. I came on a little later. I didn't come on live. So I decided to come on a little bit afterwards. But thank you so much for tuning in. Have a great day and God bless. And thank you, Dr. Debbie.
Thank you. One episode, just